Hey there, welcome to the Soul Bitcoin Show. My name is Kevin Devani, the founder of the Soul Connector. So I'm really looking forward to my talk with Gigi. After a long time, I haven't had a talk with him, so I'm really excited because he just recently actually published his book in a book format or as a ebook or paperback, 21 Lessons. It's available on Amazon. And the subtitle is What I've Learned from Falling Down the Bitcoin Rabbit Hole. It's a really good, well-written book. It gives you a really playful insight and learning, you know, triggers the learning process, makes you curious and makes you understand, you know, the essence and the question of why Bitcoin. So I also want to, you know, talk with him about a spectrum of other questions, such as, you know, is the market ready? Are people ready for critical adoption? If, you know, if for unexpected reasons, for unforeseeable reasons, the demand of Bitcoin in Bitcoin should rise, especially when it comes to the technological applications, to the, you know, to the really urgently necessary and required plug and play devices, applications. I'm not talking about also like buying and selling, but like, you know, running your own full node, coin joining, coin mixing, enhancing or strengthening your privacy, all these things. So I wish, you know, there was a little bit more competition. So it's going to come eventually, but I wanted, you know, have Gigi's position and perspective on that. And is Bitcoin, it's really something that needs to be understood first. And educated about. This is why I'm doing all these podcasts and videos. So anyway, if you have any questions, please leave me a comment or you can DM me on Twitter. My handle is Kevan Devani. If you want to leave me a positive review or subscribe, follow me please on YouTube, Twitter, wherever, on any podcast platform, leave me a positive review. And if you have any questions, please get back to me. My email address is hello@thetotalconnector.com or kd@kevandevani.com. All right, without further ado, this is my interview with Gigi. Gigi, welcome to the Total Bitcoin Show. How are you doing, man? Haven't seen you.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great, too. It's still cold in Austria, so yeah, we can't change anything about the seasons, but we can do and do change something about, you know, how we interact, how we evolve on Bitcoin, within Bitcoin. So why don't you just tell me, you know, out of the blue, what is like the most recent things that are, you know, that seem to be really important to you or that have, you know, crossed your path?
That's a good question right from the start. Well, the most important thing I think for the last several weeks and months is getting more into the Lightning side of things. So I'm trying to catch up on the Lightning network, and I've set up a couple of nodes and played around with it a little bit. But there's still so much to learn, and everything is evolving so quickly that I'm having a hard time catching up, really. So I hope to change that in the foreseeable future. I really want to, maybe even program a little bit and build a small Lightning app, something like that. Just a pet project to get my hands dirty.
All right. Well, Gigi, again, congratulations to your book. I gave it to my girlfriend on January 11th. She was really happy. As I said before, she told me afterwards she was actually going to buy the book. So it was sort of an intuition. So I bought it for her, and it's stylistically and the way, you know, you formatted it and you wrote it, it's just brilliant. You know, it gives you more of a playful, you know, curious making way, you know, that you go deeper into the Bitcoin's rabbit hole. So what was your feedback until now from other readers?
So thanks, first of all. And I Yeah, the feedback was great so far. So I decided to put the 21 lessons, which I wrote quite a while ago, into a book form, since it was just, a very natural thing for me to do. And I thought I would just go ahead and do the book thing, go through the process once and see what comes of it and see if people actually buy it. So the content is pretty much the same as it is on 21lessons.com, and you can read the content for free online, but if you want to get the book, you can do so as well. And there's a little bit of an there's a little bit of new content and some corrections in the book, and a very nice foreword by Hesma Cook, good friend of mine, who was kind enough to write a foreword.
It's hilarious, the foreword.
I'm happy that I actually went through with it and mm-hmm. finished the book and did the whole process once, because I still have some more things to say, and I want to continue writing as best as I can, and maybe I'll do another book in the future. But as you know, I'm gonna be a dad very soon, and I very much doubt that I will have the excess time to write as much as I did in the past. So we'll see how that goes.
Who knows? Maybe you end up writing, a children's book.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, we already have a great...
Bit and Robbie, yeah. So, Gigi, I've been thinking a lot, lately, I know I've avoided now, the word mass adoption, and Corey Clipson of Give Bitcoin also uses the term. It was sort of a simultaneous thing. But I use the terminology critical adoption rate. So it's more now about getting the minimum number of people into Bitcoin. And I know I'm a little bit obsessed with it, and I have a problems with that myself. Whatever that critical adoption rate means, does it mean 3%, 4%, 5% of each population or total Earth's population? Do you think things have become easier for people, for really the average noob out there?
Yeah, well, it's definitely easier. I mean, if you look back a couple of years, it was insanely hard to get up and running with Bitcoin. And today you can simply download an app on the App Store. And for especially the onboarding on Lightning, for example, is, very much easier than it was a couple of years ago. So I think denying that it got easier is just not truthful, because it obviously got easier. We still have a lot of work to do, that's for sure, and it's still complicated, and it's still I think hard for people to get into it and actually grasp it. And especially in the Western world, also many people don't see the use of Bitcoin except for a speculative purpose. And so if you're not into speculation or not into finance, then many people don't really see the point of it, because more or less the financial system works for them. And I think those people that really get Bitcoin and are into it and use it regularly are people on the edges, and people that actually experience financial censorship and actually have trouble getting a bank account or keeping a bank account or doing transactions. And so in terms of mass adoption, I think it's an interesting discussion to have, what kind of percentage number is actually a critical mass. And I'm not sure actually where I stand on it, to be honest, because I think that mass adoption will come actually, even though I also tend to agree that it's not necessary for Bitcoin. A lot of people say, mass adoption, we will never really need it. Bitcoin will be there anyway. And that's true, of course. But I also have seen over the last 10, 15 years or so, how quickly things can change thanks to technology. And if you look at the mobile sector, for example, or at the computational sector in general, things changed very, very quickly. And I think for Bitcoin, the potential is definitely there that things change exponentially fast and suddenly a new app will come out or a new game or whatever social trend will suddenly appear on the world stage and everyone will have this new app and maybe it will use Bitcoin underneath, who knows?
Well, it depends on what we're talking about. If we're talking about just a basic buying or selling of Bitcoin, sure, that's really easy. I guess handling, taking care of your private keys, your hardware wallet, has become significantly easier. Even though, from my own experience and my own interactions with other people, we still have to go a long way. What about running a full node? What about coin joining? Enhancing privacy features, functions for the sake of fungibility? All these things. Do you see some kind of horizon coming up? In terms of development, in terms of sort of a Steve Jobs gimmick, making it easy, because I've really looked at it and myself. I tried to play with Wasabi. In all modesty, I gotta say I failed. That's why I've been using Samurai and Whirlpool. It's definitely, as even Matt Odell of Tales of the Crypt admits it, it's easier, but somehow from the privacy default functions, maybe it's not default by per se, but you know what I'm saying?
Sure. I definitely agree with you that it's still complicated. And I actually, I remember watching your video. I think you did a video on YouTube where you first used Wasabi and gave some feedback, and I think some of the developers even took you up on the feedback. I realized that it's still very difficult if you don't have a deep knowledge about Bitcoin, and also if you're not very technical. I think both things are a hindrance to using those tools correctly. But it's just in general a very difficult concept, key handling, the proper handling of private keys and of information that you should not share with anyone is a really difficult and foreign concept. This concept didn't exist for humanity for the last several thousand years, so it never existed before really. And the handling of private keys and building, We had this problem before in computation with PGP and building a web of trust and the handling of your own keys. And it's still a very, very hard problem. I still think that we're innovating in that and making it easier. For example, if you look at products what Casa is offering with multi-signature setups and key rotation setups, where you are able to lose one key and they will replace it for you, so to speak, which is, it's not as trustless as doing everything yourself, but it's still a quite a good setup, and you need to make different compromises in a way.
Yeah.
Everything is a trade-off in Bitcoin. You cannot have, if you want to be completely self-sovereign, then it's also possible for you to fuck everything up yourself, and people do that all the time. You can destroy your key, you can lose your key, you can have a stroke or an accident and gain access, lose access that way, and you have the inheritance problem. There are a bunch of hard problems still to solve, and people are working on that. I think good solutions will pop up. Also, speaking of mass adoption, your previous question, just always remember that this is not a sprint. Bitcoin is a marathon, and in the end, we're in it for the sound money and for reintroducing sound money to the world. And this is a war against the current system, so to speak. And it will be a long game. I still think that it can happen way quicker than most people think because it's an exponential technology. And my time horizon is, I've said this many times, like it's the next three halvings, so which will be 9 years. And so I'm very bullish and optimistic for the next decade or so. And I think a lot of people underestimate how quickly things can evolve. I mean, the smartphones are a little bit older than 10 years now, and it's just mind-blowing what happened in that space. And I think similar things can happen with Bitcoin and Lightning and higher layer technologies. I think the most important thing is that we don't fuck up Bitcoin, because it has to be, well, it has to continue to work as it did work in the last 10 years. And I think everything else will follow from that. People will gain in confidence and will allocate more capital to Bitcoin, and Bitcoin will continue to eat up monetary value of other assets and of the traditional financial system. And I think the problems you mentioned with key handling, with running a node and doing coin join, I think those things, they will be solved eventually. And currently it's just very difficult. And if you look at other technologies, we had the same problems. Like with email, for example, encrypted email is so complicated. And so it basically does not exist because nobody's using it. Nobody's using encrypted email. But we now have Signal and WhatsApp and other encrypted messages. I mean, I don't recommend using WhatsApp for obvious Facebook-ish reasons. Mm-hmm. But Signal and some other messages are really good. And the web is pretty much encrypted by default now. I mean, it still has a lot of problems, and we have centralization thanks to Google and Facebook, and mostly those two companies, Amazon as well. But it's still, compared to like 20 years ago where everything was plain text, thanks to the revelations of Snowden and some other people, we now have HTTPS and encryption by default. And I can definitely see a future where we have similar improvements in the Bitcoin world, and you don't have to even think about running a node, because the apps that you're using or the hardware you're using will just run a node for you. And the same for CoinJoin. I think with Lightning and other technologies, you will not have to think about handling the UTXOs yourself. You don't have to think about coin selection and coin joining. It's very good that those things exist now, and that people take their privacy seriously and use those tools and educate others to use those tools. But I'm more optimistic than most, I think. And I think that in the next 10 years or so, this will be almost a non-issue. Just like encrypted web traffic is the default now. Everything has to use HTTPS pretty much. And just spying on regular web traffic is not really feasible anymore. And I think just spying on regular transactions by regular people will not be feasible in the future. I hope I hope that answers your question a bit.
Yeah. Let me take a short excursion before, and then go back to my original question I had, or in regards to everything you said. You posted something, you tweeted something about the facial recognition. I mean, it's and that was like really scandalous. You know, the article that you posted on Twitter, it was something like 3 billion. Faces were somehow hijacked from it. Yeah. Can you elaborate on that? What does it mean for the average person out there?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, it's related to the privacy issue. It's not necessarily related to Bitcoin, but I think a lot of people in the Bitcoin space are very paranoid when it comes to privacy. And I'm not sure if I'm really paranoid, but I'm a privacy advocate for sure. And
you need paranoia for your job.
Paranoia, yeah. But I think what's really important nowadays is to have proper digital hygiene. And I think most people are really bad at doing that. So I'm trying my best to be at least not bad at it. And I try to not share my real name and not share pictures of my face and stuff like that, because I just know way too much about the technologies that are used today and have been used in the past to abuse all the data that is just put out there by people. And I think everyone has to find their own balance in a way. And have to, yeah, you again, it's a trade-off. You have to decide for yourself what kind of information you're willing to share, and do like a risk analysis of what might happen to you in the future if things go south, and what is okay to share and whatnot. Let's put it that way. The New York Times article I shared, I mean, I wasn't really surprised that companies like this exist. So there is a private company that does large scale data mining on all the pictures that are online, pretty much. And they run sophisticated facial recognition algorithms to help law enforcement and other agencies to find people, and they are also selling this to law enforcement. So basically you can drag and drop a picture of a person into this app, and they will tell you, this app will tell you everything about this person just by doing facial recognition and a match of their database, and they just cross-reference all the information they have on that. And it's supposedly it works really, really well. I'm not surprised, because a facial recognition crossed into the superhuman level a couple of years ago. So computers are way better now at recognizing faces than normal people. And so that's just the world we're living in right now. And I think it's good that stories like these are getting published and come to light. And I think people just should be informed.
Wow, that's pretty scary, Gigi. I mean, the abuse potential that I'm thinking of, abusing this kind of technology, or for whatever, nefarious purposes, or would it be criminals or the sort of official agencies or law enforcement agents? It's just grotesque, but
Yeah, you don't need a lot of imagination to see how something like that can be abused. And as we've also seen, thanks to the Snowden revelations, these things are abused all the time. I mean, if you have such a system and are working on it, people are just people, and they will look up lovers, and they will look up enemies, and they will look up anyone they would like, and they will try to get a benefit just by abusing this data. And I think the most scary thing is that everything is currently happening all at once. And there was also a couple of weeks ago another article by the New York Times about very benign apps that store your location data, and they build very sophisticated location profiles on everyone, pretty much. So your weather app, for example, pulls your location to give you better weather information, and they sell this data to the highest bidder, pretty much. And there are analytics companies and companies that just build very detailed and specific profiles. And the thing is that if you look to China, for example, there you can see where this road leads to. Like if you have a government that is keen on controlling its population and abusing this kind of data, then you just have to look into the social credit score system of China to see how this can be abused. And I hope that everyone listening to this agrees that this is not a future we want to head towards.
Oh my God! Because it's so, it's so realistic that this could happen. I'm just observing everything that's going on right now, and that's why I asked you. The reason I'm asking you, what do you think about critical adoption? Is because I see these unexpected, terrible events taking place, such as limiting cash, banning of cash, the central bank digital currencies coming in. Negative interest rates already in 25-30% of all bank accounts, deposit accounts in Germany. The pending crash that could happen anytime soon, maybe latest of 2021 in Germany, the meltdown of the banks, of the insolvencies. So there are conditions that could happen unexpectedly sooner than anticipated, and then people will literally flock to Bitcoin, or they will, try it, to look for the exit door, like safe haven asset or whatever, like capital control, all these things. So how would we manage that if there's not more competition than, for example, you mentioned Casa? Yeah, even Hess McCook admitted he's not technical much either, but he prefers Casa because not only of its ecosystem, it's really plug and play easy. And I'm just wondering, why isn't there more competition for delivering the all-in-one kit to people?
I think there is some competition. I just think that the space is still rather small. I think the Bitcoin space in particular is rather small. We saw in 2017, the Scambrian explosion of shitcoins and just a huge misallocation of capital and developer time into other projects. And I think the Bitcoin ecosystem would be further along if we wouldn't have had this misallocation. And I think to stay on a positive note, I think in the last year or maybe 1 or 2 years, I think we saw a reallocation of human capital and just capital in general to Bitcoin only in the most general sense, I would say. And I think that's a good development. So I think the more competition will come. I think more products will come. I think just people in the Bitcoin space underestimate how early we still are. The space, again, is still very, very small, in my opinion. And you can see this also in terms of market capitalization and just comparing it to other safe haven assets and to other, just the amount of money that is in other areas compared to Bitcoin and the wider ecosystem. It's just, there is no comparison yet. We're still very, very small. It's still a very, very small lifeboat. And I'm not convinced that if the next crash will come, that everyone will flock to Bitcoin. I think a lot of Bitcoiner would like to think that, but I think most people still are very much intimidated by Bitcoin because they just don't understand it at all. And I think a lot of people are still kind of afraid because if you think about Bitcoin, I think a lot of people automatically think of hacks and just exchanges going bust and people losing money and people losing access to the Bitcoin. So I think, we just need a little bit more time. And I'm not sure if Bitcoin as a whole, or let's say the Bitcoin space as a whole, would be ready if the crash would occur like this year or the next one. I'm not sure about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Depends whom you're talking to, I guess. At least I'm proud to have made my girlfriend and her brother to a Bitcoiner. And you know what's so funny? It's always the same observation. It's that what I observe, generally is that once it's there is more or less a positive review or article or some kind of media coverage on the mainstream, right? On mainstream coverage, whether it be a small district newspaper or something like that, then all of a sudden, so it must be something good, must be something valid. So we got to accept it. Like this is like the condition, the brain that's been conditioned, I think. If it's on, OAF, Austria's, television or mainstream newspaper, then we gotta, we somehow gotta deal with it, right? Because it's on mainstream. So this is, it's a little bit, that's a sad part of it, because there's so much information, so much knowledge. There's your book, there's your, you've got a bunch of podcasters and YouTube videos and really, and now even people, from Bayern Landesbank, like mainstream institutions, this is something where it makes an effect because, it has sort of a respectability. People look up to that. It's mainstream institutions, it's established institutions. So I guess the more, elaborations and discussions coming out of these institutions, the more generally accepted it becomes then.
Yeah, Absolutely. I think what you're doing is exactly the right thing to do. Like, onboard the people that are closest to you and try to save them in a way. And yeah, I don't necessarily want to speak in absolutist terms, but of course it is kind of a safe haven and a lifeboat if you use it as such. Like, if you're afraid of the financial collapse, then the best thing to do is stack as many sats as you can, take care of your keys, and just dollar cost average every week or every day or every month, whatever you can set up and whatever you can afford, and just, yeah, wait it out, wait for the storm, so to speak. But I think I really like the phrase that Bitcoin is different things to different people, and for us in the West, it might be like a savings vehicle, and for other people they might use it very differently and just use it to wire money home, for example. And I think it will continue to evolve like that a lot of Bitcoiners try to onboard as many close friends and family as they possibly can themselves, because that's just what evangelical believers do. And but I'm also happy, as you said, the Bayern Landesbank, they did a proper analysis of the stock to flow model, I believe, and I think I saw a presentation of one of the Bayern LB people at the Value of Bitcoin conference.
Yeah, I'm going to actually have an interview both with both of them, Manuel Anders and Jörg Hermstorf, who did that together. Yeah, we're going to do this in German maybe for the audience. Yeah, so let's see.
Yeah, that's nice. That's good to hear. And I think it will just evolve in parallel, because now we have some Bitcoiners at the banks now, and we have some Bitcoiners even in Congress and in the House of Representatives in the US. And it will just be a matter of time until every political party has some Bitcoiners, because they got personally interested in it and are just well read in it and understand the system properly. And I think we start to see that now with, for example, the Bayern LB people. And I wouldn't be surprised if all the major banks had some people that are really seriously looking into that. And I share the concern of some of the Bitcoiners that it will be a race in that sense, that the little man might be outrun by the current institutions, because I think the banks will start to stack as well and will allocate some of their money into Bitcoin. And I think that's when the block space will really run out, because Bitcoin is very scarce, and I think the time to stack sats in peace, it will run out at some point in the future.
Wow. Oh, that's a pretty, pretty interesting statement you do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how many people can stack sats regularly on the base chain? It's not many, you know, it's really not many, because if you just do the math, block space is very, very scarce, and you would have to resort to second layer solutions if things really take off. And then I'm pretty sure that those solutions will pop up in the future, but in general, I believe that if you're just a regular person working a regular job, you probably wouldn't be able to to pay the transaction fees if you stack daily or weekly or something like that. I mean, we've seen it before, we will see it again. Fees will rise, and there's just no way around that.
Mm. Are you talking like an exponential fee rise, or just, you know, a gradual, like?
Who knows? It's a fee market, you know, so fees will rise as high as people are willing to pay for it. And so there's not really a way to tell. I would say, I don't know. I mean, we have a lot of protocol improvements in the works, and I'm very bullish on Lightning. I think that like we've seen even last year, I mean, the new year is very young still, but a couple of weeks ago, we saw the first exchanges also hopping onto Lightning and enabling Lightning also for traders and to get your money into Bitcoin using the Lightning network in that way. And I'm just in general very bullish that all this will be sorted out by the market. And speaking of fees, I mean, we regularly see very large transactions that pretty much move like $1 billion without having any fee at all. Like only, I think a week ago or so, $1 billion was moved for a fee of, I don't know, maybe it was like 75 cents or maybe yeah. it was $10. I don't care. I
mean, it's incredible. Money, you know? Yeah.
And I think you obviously can see the power of Bitcoin there. And if you're a large institution and you're utilizing Bitcoin in that way, then you're, of course, willing to pay way, way, way more than the average user would be willing to pay just to stack sets. And I think we will all of this will be happening in the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. You know, this this is I don't know what to call it. I mean, could this be like a unexpected? I don't know whether it's the right terminology or from Nassim Taleb, the black swan event, like something that is really unexpected. Like events going to accelerate, you know, in speed and things are going to happen so unexpectedly fast and so unforeseeable. That it's really going to hit us, hit everybody. Do you think this is going to happen in the next few years? Like market liquidity, market capitalization, the demand rising exponentially. Is this realistic?
I think Bitcoin was the black swan event. I think the most important thing. I mean, in general, the most important thing was that. Bitcoin was created in the first place, that it came into being. But from a market perspective, I think the most important event was the first monetization of Bitcoin, that someone was willing to pay something for the first few Bitcoins, like the first exchange that was done for monetary value. I think that was the most important step for Bitcoin. And after that, it's just a feedback loop. And I think every single Satoshi will just rise in value because of this feedback loop. It will just take a little bit of time. But again, I think we're still on an exponential trend and it's still an exponential process. And we will have these cycles. I'm quite convinced that these cycles will continue and we will have the next insane mania and insane bull run. And we will again have a blow off from the top and we will have another bear cycle and people will lose like 95% to 99% of the money. And that's just the way it seems that this organic system wants to grow. And I think there is not much we can do about it. Speaking of other black swan events, I mean, there are black swan events, they are impossible to forecast, so it's impossible to tell. But if the macro guys are to be believed, I think we're overdue for another financial crisis and another crash. And I think it's hard to say how this will play out. It will probably be different than the great financial crisis of 2008, but who knows? I mean,
yeah, that was peanuts. Yeah, 2008 was peanuts, I think, compared to what is coming with all the negative rate interest policies, the credit debt bubble.
I think what makes the current climate so interesting is that Bitcoin in itself, like even if the current financial system would be working perfectly, it would still have its merit and would be working as it is working right now. And people would still use it. And we have now this additional variable that the current financial system is kind of going to shit. And as you said, we have negative interest rate policy and we have all kinds of really weird, insane things happening and a lot of liquidity is injected into the system and we still have quantitative easing, even though it's not called that anymore. And so it's going to be interesting how the old and the new financial system, how the interplay is going to be, because I think it's not out of the question that some of the big financial players will get into Bitcoin in before or during the next crash or after the next crash, and then things will be really different, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally with you on that. Let me ask you, just to wrap this up a little, why is there only get bit for auto DC, or auto, what do you call it, because it's a favorite thing of Hess McCook, auto dollar cost averaging. There's only one company, right, in Europe that does that, or is there more competition?
I only know of this one company, and why there is not more competition, I don't know.
this makes me wonder, on every level, whether it's the auto DCA or, people coming together, entrepreneurs coming together, investors. I actually talked to investors and they said, let's do this, I said, yeah, but, I'm not a techie. We would have to set up a really excellent team to do some product development, a really healthy competition to and create all in one kit. That would be something I see in the very foreseeable future. Do you think it's something doable?
I think it's definitely doable. Why is there not more competition? I think it's still a difficult space to start companies in. I think, for example, we saw with Bottle Pay that they had to close down because of the AML5 regulations. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are many countries that just have no clear regulation or have already over-regulated everything that has to do with Bitcoin. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs are just a little bit cautious to start full-on Bitcoin companies because of regulatory backlash. And you don't want to get into the weeds of taxation, for example, if you are for example taking your profits in Bitcoin or paying your employees in Bitcoin or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just different in every country, so it's really hard, I think, to do companies that act globally, and Bitcoin is borderless technology, so everything you do, it makes sense that you also do globally in a way. And I think I think it will just take time, and I think it will take a lot of education for politicians and regulators as well. And I think it will also take time until venture capitalists and other people lose their fear in some sense of Bitcoin. And again, I'm hopeful, but I also think that I know I repeat myself, but I think everything is still kind of small, and you can't save everyone, and you can't save everyone right now, and you never can save everyone. But Bitcoin won't go away, and so the best thing to do is, as I said, the stuff that you're doing: educate your loved ones, educate your friends, try to get them at least a little bit of exposure into Bitcoin. You never know when you need it, and you never know when shit really hits the fan.
Good. Well, I really enjoyed this talk. Really awesome. Can you do you have any final thoughts? Is something we should have mentioned before mentioning your articles and your website?
I think I'm good. I think, again, I just want to stress that for all the Bitcoiners that might be listening, remember that this is not a sprint, but it's a marathon. And we need to have a lot of patience and a lot of good virtues, and try to be patient with your friends and your family, and try to be patient with yourself, and just try to talk to everyone honestly and educate everyone as well as you can, and take everything step by step. Like, not everyone has to be a full-on self-sovereign cypherpunk that loses his identity and does perfect OPSEC all the time. It's a step-by-step gradual process, and I think it's also necessary for for Bitcoin to be used correctly, you also have to understand it quite a bit. And so it just takes time and some patience.
Right. So yeah, at the end of the day, you know, we're all doing this, you know, for our future and for all children and for your child. So I'm really excited and happy for you, Gigi, that, you know, you're becoming dad in 2 months, right? So So hope to see you soon, man, and sometime in Austria, and yeah, let's make the best out of it.
I'll be around. I'll be at some conferences. Unfortunately, I can't come to the San Francisco Bitcoin 2020 conference. Mm-hmm. Kind of sad about it, but you know, it will be the week when my child is born. So there's just no way I'm going to make that.
Right.
I'll also be at the Value of Bitcoin conference in Munich, I think. And I think I'll be there as well. So
are you going to be in Vienna? Because there's going to be on March 5th the Value Bitcoin conference, sort of a satellite conference of this Value Bitcoin conference in Vienna on March 5th.
I'm not sure if I can make it. Maybe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well,
I'll see you around anyway.
I'll see you around, Gigi. Okay. Thank you so much for your time. All right.
Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye. So, what do you guys think about this amazing interview talk with Gigi? Give him a follow on Twitter. His handle is @theGigi, or maybe I'm even pronouncing. I always call him Gigi, so maybe it's Gigi. The sort of is his pseudonymous name. And check out his websites, thegigi.com. Also, bitcoin-resources.com. And then we've got another website, 21lessons.com. There you can see also the cover of his book, and you can even, you know, listen to it as an audio. So it's definitely available on, if you click on it, you'll come to Amazon where you can order it. Definitely order it. It's really worth having it in your bookshelf. Yeah, that's about it. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for support. Let me know what you think. Leave me a positive review if you want to help me in any shape or form. Give me a follow, subscribe on YouTube. Give me a positive review on any podcast platform, please. If there are any ethical Bitcoin sponsors out there who want to sponsor me, especially Bitcoin sponsors, please get in touch with me. Write me to hello@thetotalconnector.com or kd@kvandabani.com. Thanks again so much for your support, for listening, and for making this monetary evolution a reality. We can only do this together. All right, that's about it. Thank you so much again, and I'll see you soon. Bye.